thank you for tuning in. Today is February 16th, 2012, and now it is my honor to bring on the show our guest this evening, Cynthia Davis, who is a candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Missouri. She is running via the Constitution Party. As I told you at the beginning of the show, she has an extensive bio, and what we are going to do is just welcome her to the show and let us have her fill us in herself. Are you there, Cynthia?
I'm here.
Welcome to the show. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Well, before we get started, I read some of your bio at the beginning of the show. Why don't you go ahead and just inform the listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we can kind of dive into some of the issues.
Sure. Well, I live in O'Fallon, Missouri, and I served on the city council for 8.5 years, and then I moved into state government and served in the Missouri State Legislature for 8 years until I was term limited in 2010. And so here I am today asking, what are we going to do to make the world a better place? And things have gotten worse just since I left the legislature. It doesn't seem to make any difference which party is in control. We are losing ground every day.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if, and I'm sure it's not a problem because it is, in your bio, but I would like listeners to know that when she says both parties, she is not preferential to either one, is my understanding. She was a Republican and left to join the Constitution Party. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is. I was very deeply involved in the Republican Party. I was not only a Republican elected official, but I also, in the Missouri State Legislature, but I was also a committee woman, and I was the vice president of the Republican Women's Group. I was a member of two Pachyderm groups, and I chaired, up until July, the Republican Central Committee of St. Charles County, which is one of the most Republican counties in the whole state of Missouri. But I got to a point where I said, this is futile. We are not getting where we need to go. The reason I was a Republican is because I believed in limited government. I believed in personal responsibility. I believed in fiscal responsibility and constitutional principles, standing with the Constitution. How novel is that? And one day I woke
up. It seems novel nowadays, yes.
Yeah. So one day I woke up and I said, you know what? I think I'm more Republican than anyone around me. Where are all the Republicans who share my values? And they were very few and far between. And in my own exasperation, I said, you know what? I'm 52 years old. I don't have a whole nother lifetime to live. We better fix things now, or what is the point of this?
Exactly. And really, it shouldn't be, I'll just comment through, and if you have something you would like to add, it really should not be about the letter that's behind your name. It should be what your beliefs and principles are. And, the limited government, that kind of a situation where you actually stand, instead of this multi-alphabet soup thing that we have going on, where, it's just gotten to the point where no one can get along unless you have this alphabet behind your letter behind your name. And that's not what this was all about to begin with.
Well, you know what, though? If there are good, honest citizens like us, that gives us hope, because you know what? I'm not about to sit back in my lazy boy chair drinking the Kool-Aid and watching American Idol on TV, because things are getting worse. Let's go out there and fix it.
Exactly. And I'm just going to take a kind of a selfish plug here and just say, because I know she's listening, I would like to say hello again to Donna. I did at the beginning of the show, Donna and Nick, but I would like to thank Donna for all of her hard work, arranging for you to be on the show tonight. I actually met Donna when I was asked to address the state convention for the Constitution Party here in Minnesota. And she had traveled here for that. And you know, just a kind of a funny story. When I was done, I went and I was sitting behind this woman in front of me at the Constitution Party, and what a wonderful group. People loved the speech on illegal immigration, of course. And this woman turns around and says to me, oh, my husband Nick's going to be so disappointed he didn't get to meet you. And I was a little taken back. She says, well, we listen to you all of the time. And in the, and no kidding, for real, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, she must have me confused with somebody like Laura Ingraham. So I look at my husband and I say this. This woman in front of me asked me to compete with somebody else. And I said, you mean the Ruthie report? And she said, well, yeah, the Ruthie report. I was just flabbergasted. You know what? I'm going to be old and senile with false teeth and early Alzheimer's, and I'm never going to forget that day. It was just so wonderful. So hello to Donna. So let's move along here. In your bio, it says that you were the first legislator to file the Health Care Freedom Act, protecting Missouri from Obamacare. Where does that stand right now in Missouri?
Well, there was something that was passed, and it is says in state law, not our Constitution, but just state law, that we will not be forced to take whatever the national government gives us. But you know what? It's really sad that the courts have taken everything away from us, and we're, you know, it's a perpetual struggle. As long as we have somebody in the White House who is not motivated by the same issues you and I care about and really wants to fling open the doors to everything and all the things.
Socialism.
Yeah. We've got an uphill battle. We are going to fight tooth and nail for every last vestige of freedom left with us. And hopefully we can brace. And, you know, it's not just the man in the White House. It also is the Congress. And you know what? The Congress, if they would want to protect us, we could get some progress going. So, and not to sound like I'm complaining about everybody, but I just want to tell you that there's plenty of blame to go around. And if our founding fathers could have heard this discussion, they would not believe it. So we've fallen pretty far off, and it's time for us to ask, what can the states do left to protect ourselves? And now, of course, this week, every time you turn on the TV or radio, it seems like they're talking about birth control and the mandate that is in Obamacare. And it really does surprise me that it caused such a controversy. But the problem with the birth control mandate is it's not actually a health care item. That health care is designed, for the insurance component, all insurance is designed to protect you from a catastrophe. So your house insurance is in case your house burns to the ground, and your car insurance is in case you get into an accident. And like somebody else said, you don't get car insurance for an oil change. That's part of regular maintenance. And you can't, to the idea of let's make our insurance cover everyday maintenance is part of what's driving the cost of health care up. So it is.
What an excellent way of looking at that. I had never, I did not associate that with, you know, the car insurance is for when you wreck the car. And, you know, I never even thought of that. That's excellent.
Right. Well, you know, and people do need new tires occasionally, but I don't believe there is an insurance company out there who will sell it. And if we told the employers that you can offer your employees this premium if they want the birth control rider to be included, or you don't have to pay for that extra coverage, well, the kind of people who don't need birth control are not going to be they're not going to pay for it. And if they did pay for it, the amount they would pay in their premium would be equal to what they spent at the drugstore buying condoms and all the other accessories.
You know, and what drives me mad is that you can hear our elderly complaining, you know, those that have worked hard, and, you know, and not that I'm not saying that some of them are, you know, taking a free ride, but, you know, we have our elderly that need their medications and this and that, and while they're screaming and hollering that they need help, we provide illegal aliens, those in the country illegally, with health care. And my understanding is that it is in the health care bill.
And it was supposed to only be medical stabilization. I mean, originally, the hospitals aren't obligated to give you the Cadillac Deluxe treatment of everything everybody else gets. So there are some huge problems with health care, and including illegal aliens. I do have to tell you a funny story. My daughter came home from school with the application that they gave all the parents for the national school lunch program and school breakfast program. And it says right here on the application, may I apply if someone in my household is not a U.S. citizen? The answer is right here in print. Yes, your children do not have to be U.S. citizens to qualify for free or reduced price meals. So I guess my point is you could be here and not be a U.S. citizen, but it raises a red flag. I wouldn't mind if I went to a foreign country if they told me if I'm not a citizen of that country, I have to pay for my own lunch, okay, because that I'm not
right.
A citizen. I mean, being a citizen does have some benefits. But and this is, I know it's possible for people to be here and not be citizens, but then why are we paying for them?
Exactly. You know, it's the nonsense, Cynthia, is, you know, and as we go through tonight, you know, if you think of something that I do not ask, please feel free. This is a very laid back, I just want the listeners to get the very best from you. So if you think of something, when you started that little segment there, I thought you were going to tell me about the turkey and cheese sandwich versus the chicken nuggets out in North Carolina, where the federal inspectors are inspecting our children's lunches. How far away from the Constitution has this country gone? Oh, my Lord. I cannot believe that story. I've read, I don't know how many different articles on it, but so let's go back then. Moving along, with the Second Amendment, I see you are very strong in the Second Amendment, that strengthening the rights of citizens to protect themselves, and you have signed on to two lawsuits that went before the Supreme Court?
Yes, amicus brief. Let me say before we get way past this that I knew there were lunchroom inspectors because I, even in a nice state like Missouri, I sent my son to public school, and I got a phone call a couple weeks into the school year from one of the principal, and she said that we observed your son eating lunch in the cafeteria, and it looks like it might be peanut butter. Is it? My son loves
Why was she calling and asking you that?
Yeah, because she wanted to make sure it really was peanut butter before they went to drastic methods. But they confiscated his peanut butter sandwich, sent him to the nurse's office, had him wash his mouth and hands and arms and face before they'd let him come back. And then she said, we're going to give him something else to eat. And I said, well, as long as you're not charging me for it. So she said, well, we'll give him a cheese sandwich. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? They did the same thing to me already this year. And I just feel like it's time for some common sense. Because
was it the peanut butter because of another child might be allergic to peanut butter?
Yeah, well.
Or is that just not healthy?
The school has a no peanuts allowed in any way, shape, or form policy, and I wasn't aware of it. I didn't actually pack his lunch that day, and peanut butter is his favorite thing. So we learned that there are food police in the cafeteria, and that I'm telling you, we need to be vigilant to watch out for who's paying attention to what we pack. It does make a parent nervous. What if I forget the carrots? But now going in.
Can you imagine this? I cannot imagine. Can you remember back when we were kids, Cynthia? I'm older than you, I'm sure. But can you remember back when we were kids, our mothers having to sit there and make sure that at least one of these were in our lunches? They put in what we wanted, what we were going to eat, and what we could afford. Seriously.
Well, right. And let me give you one more piece of commentary about how it really works. I was a foster parent for 9 months, and during that time, foster children automatically are on the free breakfast, free lunch program. And I had one boy who was 12 years old with undiagnosed ADHD, and when he would go to school every day, the only thing he wanted for breakfast that they offered at school was chocolate milk and powdered sugar donuts. And that's like the worst
powdered
thing.
Powdered sugar donuts.
Yeah. And then he'd come up to lunchtime, and I would ask him what he had for lunch. Well, let me tell you what kids are like. By the time they're in middle school, he would eat the French fries and scrape everything else into the trash. You know,
yep.
you can't make a child eat vegetables. I mean, if they don't want it, they don't want it. So, I mean, he would enjoy the junk food, which there's plenty of in the school programs as well. So I'm not going to let anybody say that the school government food is any better than homemade.
No. And my final thought, you know, because we have so much to discuss here, is the whole controversy over this, I have two simple words, home school. I'm a big fan of homeschooling, especially seeing that the government has now taken away our parental responsibilities, thinking that they can do better. But let's move on here. The Second Amendment, I'm confused by you took two lawsuits before the Supreme Court for Missouri, or was this for private individuals or gun rights?
I signed on to an NRA lawsuit where they wanted some legislators on it to make their case stronger. And then there was another case in California that I also signed on to that was asking Barack Obama to produce his birth certificate. So
oh, here we go.
Yeah. Sorry.
Cynthia, this is great. Keep going, girl. You just, you know, keep going with it.
Well, there's nothing to be accomplished by letting him cover up his origins. And even in the last birth certificate he showed us, the latest edition, it clearly says his father is a citizen of Kenya, and which was under the British Crown at the time. So even Barack Obama didn't claim that both of his parents were U.S. citizens, which then means he's not a natural-born citizen. And the reason people are confused about it is they don't know what the word natural-born means. We know what a U.S. citizen means, but nobody's been taught what a natural-born citizen is. And that comes back from the Law of Nations, which says you have to have two parents who are both U.S. citizens for you to be considered a natural-born citizen. And his father never was a U.S. citizen. It has to do with loyalty to the country. And obviously, with Barack Obama being raised partially in Indonesia and having a variety of settings, his loyalty is not to the United States. And we're seeing the fruit of that now. We're seeing somebody who wants to make the world flat for America to come down and not be as wealthy as the other nations. We just foolishly assumed that he wanted our country to be strong and better than everyone else like we were. And now we're at a point where it's become obvious, no, he doesn't want us to be strong and better than everyone else. He wants us to come down and be weak so that everyone else will feel like they're bigger now. And that's not serving us well.
It is interesting that Sheriff Joe Arpaio of Maricopa County, Arizona, has a cold case posse that is investigating Obama's birth certificate issues, and he has said that he will release his findings on March 1st. So that is interesting.
Well, what I was going to say about that is, first, the Democrat Party let our country down because they should have scrutinized their candidates before they ever let him get on the ballot, and they didn't. And then when the Democrats failed and they put forth somebody who was disqualified, it became the job of the Republican Party to fight it and say, excuse me, he can't be on the ballot, he's disqualified. And where was their raucous? I mean, there was nothing coming out of the Republican Party, which should have been where it belonged. They should have brought the
light.
Right. And so then when you let the talk show hosts and all the other rules for radical people get involved, their tactic was to try and shame anybody who dared to question if he's a natural born citizen, instead of just, let's look at the facts. Can anybody just look at facts here? So it just amazed me that people would resort to mocking and ridiculing and telling any state legislator, if you want to make an issue out of it, we're going to make you look like you're so stupid because you said the emperor's clothes were missing and were missing.
Those of us that have been fighting illegal immigration just seem to be immune to that kind of thing. Now we've been called names and, you know, so many names in this battle against illegal immigration that it's almost like a medal of honor now to be associated with the right group of people that are being called names this week. But anyway, the reason I brought up the guns, the Second Amendment, you know, and your Supreme Court rulings is because, one, I wanted to know, in Missouri, does Missouri go by county or state for shall right to carry? And the involvement with Fast and Furious, the Department of Justice, Eric Holder, and these guns going into Mexico. Cynthia, I swear, as I live and breathe, I think that was an intentional action that did get out of hand, but I think they knew what they were doing when they went into this to disarm the American public from their Second Amendment rights.
Oh, absolutely. We need to stand strong and be vigilant and fight this every step of the way, because the founders clearly intended for the every citizen who wanted a gun to be able to have a gun. And what's ridiculous about this, when I went to get my concealed weapon permit and I discovered that the Missouri law says it's illegal for anybody to possess a firearm in a church, and I was so puzzled by that. I'm like, wait a minute. That's important. First of all, why should government tell a church what it can and cannot do? After all, a church is private property. That property it's on does not belong to the government, and therefore we don't want government to tell us what we can do on our if we can or cannot have guns on our private property. That's the decision of the property owner, which should be the congregation. So then when I filed a bill that said let's take that archaic part of the law out, because when we did the concealed weapon permit legislation, we did insert in there, but it's up to the discretion of the church. And so this was a mere housekeeping effort. Let's remove the archaic law now that says guns are prohibited from churches. And you would not believe the pushback I got. The liberal press wanted to write articles about how now I'm in favor of people bringing guns to church. And that I found so laughable, because you never know when a bad guy's going to be in church, and it would be nice for people to protect themselves if they know how to use a gun.
Yep. I had a story tonight that I was unable to get to about an illegal alien that was playing with a .22, and it went off. It went through the wall and hit his little nephew or cousin, a little kid, in the head, who subsequently died. The police came and arrested him, only to find out he was an illegal alien who admitted that he was driving around Christmas Eve shooting the gun out of his window, car window. I mean, it just, the whole story just continues on to almost unbelievable Neverland that, you know, so it was fast and furious. I really believe, I honestly believe that this administration and some of those in the Department of Justice and other branches who are anti-Second Amendment saw this as a push. Mexico, of course, you know, there's one gun store in all of Mexico, and that's in Mexico City, and look how well that's worked for them. However, I do think this was intentional. As, you know, and as for when you said your right to carry, or and in Minnesota you either have the right to carry or a right to purchase. You have to have one or the other. And on the NICS, when they call in for NICS in Minnesota to make sure that you can buy this gun, which is against the, you know, constitutional right, but I had always wondered why they ask on the application, are you a citizen of the United States, or are you an illegal alien in the United States? And I thought, how stupid is that? Most illegal aliens, not all, you know, God forbid, but most of them would realize that they should answer, no, I'm not an illegal alien. So I actually asked once. I went to talking to an officer, and I asked, why do they ask that? And the reason they put that on there is so that if they are an illegal alien, they do purchase a firearm, and they answered, no, it's just another count against them.
Amazing.
I never even thought of that.
You know, when in answer to your first question, our gun permits are issued on the county level. And when my son went to get a gun permit one time, it did ask the question, what are you planning on using this gun for? And he wrote, none of your business.
Oh, really? Good for him. Following in mom's footsteps, huh?
What was he going to put, you know, if he's planning to shoot somebody? I don't get it, you know.
We did live in California for 6 years, and we happened to be in one of the last shell shell carry counties in California, but it was like 14-page application, 14 pages, and the last page was, why are you asking for this permit? Really, seriously, unbelievable. So let's move on here then. I really, really liked how you began your page on illegal immigration or immigration on your website. By the way, do you want to give your website real quick, and I'll make sure we try to make sure I always forget at the end, so don't let me forget. But do you want to give your website now so that people can look this up and check you out and, you know, hopefully help you out and support you?
Thank you. It's votecynthia.com. And on my website, you can sign up for my weekly email that I send out, and you can donate online, and you can also help us volunteer. We need a lot. We need an army of people if we're going to get the train back on the tracks. It's kind of like pushing a car uphill. We can do it. But what we're going to do is pull people together and bring common sense back to Missouri. So it's votecynthia.com, and you will be very enlightened, and you'll be glad you joined us.
Now, may I ask, you know, I don't know how else to ask this. I'm not trying to be rude. It's just an honest question. How is the campaign going?
Fabulous. You know why?
Wonderful.
Because people want a breath of fresh air. I mean, they are so tired of the typical politicians. It is time for us to stop governing by taking a poll. And what happens, this is what has ruined America, is as soon as anybody gets elected to any office, their number one quest becomes, how do I get reelected? And that is not serving us well. We don't need people who are pandering during election time, and then they get elected. And there are polls. This is what both the Republicans and Democrats do. They take polls that tell the candidates, what do I need to say to get elected? And then the poll tells them what you have to say. It polled really high. You say it, and then you get elected. So it's very systematic. Also, a lot of the money coming in is not a real donation. It's an investment. If you look at the ethics reports, you'll find the vast majority of politicians get their money from big money, big corporations, big special interest groups, political action committees. They're not getting their money from real people like you and me. I have never had so many small donations as I have this campaign. People are giving me a $5 bill or a $20 bill, and they're saying, here, God bless you, go use it, go do it, go send the message. And we're sending the message, and it is working out so well. I am somebody who cares just about taking care of doing the right thing, the principled thing, and the constitutional thing. And if you stand on that, you will not get money from the lobbyists. I'm going to tell you right now, there is no special interest group out there to help people like us get elected. But we can do this if we stand strong, and I'd like to prove a point to not only the state of Missouri, but the whole nation, that if you're honest and you just stand on principle, that that is exactly what the people want, and I believe they're going to be there for me.
Oh, that is great. I'm there for you. All right, let's move on, because I really do want to get to illegal immigration. I liked your page on, and it's titled Immigration for Any of Those That Are Going to Look for the Tab. You know, it was your grandfather coming here legally. That is the part of this whole debate that seems to be amiss. Learning to speak English, becoming a lawful taxpayer. All of this is, you know, we are the most welcoming country on the planet. The majority of us in this battle have no problem with a sensible, which we do not have, legal immigration system where they are screened when they come in, where they do want to be part of the American dream. But that American dream, the way what you put on your page and what I see in my head or what I believe the American dream to be is gone. You know, for some reason they think it's just okay to come in here and then we're going to demand that you change for me. Then really you're not obtaining the American dream, because the American dream to me is loyalty, coming here legally, English as the official language, one flag above all others, and the rule of law. And, you know, within illegal immigration, I think we're amiss on almost every issue there.
And not only that, but we as Americans honor the other cultures, and we've always thought that was special. There were people who came from Italy, and they made a little Italy, and people who made a little Ireland, and Chinatown, and all the Mexican areas where we got fun food. And the cuisine is fabulous. I mean, we have had a taste of the world here in this country, and those people back then, years ago we're talking about, when that wave happened, they came because they loved our country. And they wanted to contribute more to the United States than what they took out. They didn't come to take from us. They came to give. And when they got here, they were so grateful to be in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And that's what made it a melting pot and special. And I'll tell you, we have something very charming about some of the cultural differences. However, those people assimilated. My father grew up in Dearborn, Michigan, and he told me about half of the kids came from ethnic families where they might have spoken German or Lithuanian or some other, they were Polish or Ukraine. And that was all very special. That made it, you know, they had Wiener Schnitzel at night and the kids all got to mingle. But when they went to school, they spoke English. And that bonded them together. And that, so it's not about not enjoying the cultures. It's that they came to contribute, to help. There's a YouTube video somebody put on Facebook where this guy said, I'm black. Don't call me an African American. I'm black. I don't even want to go to Africa. I've never been to Africa. I'm an American. Just call me an American. And
exactly. The hyphenated, yes. I'm really quite tired of the hyphenated, my thing. Yeah. You know, and the story that you were just telling, we actually had friends that their grandparents were here, and they lived, you know, a lot of these smaller communities, the grandparents lived with the parents and the grandkids were there. The grandparents weren't, you know, they could, a lot of them, even if they tried, could not, you know, were old. They weren't learning the language fast enough. However, they were proud and happy and worked hard, you know, to assimilate into the American dream. But our friend had said that he had come home one day and went to talk to his grandma in their foreign, I think it was German, I'm not sure. And the grandmother actually got upset and told him he was no longer allowed to speak that. He must learn English. You know, and that's what's missing here now. There is no assimilation. There is no pride. It's there is no rule of law. Why they assume that because they were smart enough to pay another criminal to get them into the United States and on our soil illegally entitles them to anything is beyond me, Cynthia. I don't get it. The only rights to me that an illegal alien has is humane treatment while waiting for their speedy deportation.
You know, I brushed up against this anti-assimilation attitude when I filed a bill in the Missouri House that said we're going to take our driver's license tests in English. And currently in Missouri, we had allowed them to be taken in 27 different languages and more coming. And there was no statutory authority for them to give these tests in foreign languages. They just, there was no law on the Missouri books that said we only give the test in English. So I thought if the department is that confused, let's put a law together that says they'll take the test in English. I mean, of course, when Missouri was founded, nobody really even thought of such a thing. But here's the point. When the people came out who were upset about my piece of legislation, they're like, well, wait a minute, we can't have that. What are you going to do? You're trying to hurt people who can't speak English now by telling them they can't drive cars. And think with me for a minute. Be logical. Okay, if you don't speak enough English to be able to take the test, how do you even know you're supposed to buy insurance? How do you even know what our rules of the road are to know what to abide by? I mean, don't tell me you know just enough English to know that you're supposed to pass the test and what all the laws are, but you don't know enough to follow commands that the instructor would give you, like stop and pull over and parallel park. If you can't get that, I mean, we're not talking about a high level of functionality in English. So this was very interesting. It was worth filing the bill just to hear everybody fight with me and get all upset. But what they were upset about is they said to me, well, we're trying to build a China hub here in the St. Louis area, and your bill passes, and it's going to let these Chinese cargo airplanes are supposed to land here, and it's going to bring a lot of Chinese here, and they may not speak English. Why would you not want them to drive? And I'm thinking to myself still, number one, the Chinese who are going to be coming here are going to speak English. And number two is, even if they can't, we are taking away any incentive for them to assimilate if you get everything, all the perks and privileges of being here without having to learn English. So here's the other point. What if somebody is innocent and they don't speak a lick of English and they're in an accident? I mean, that's not, if you want to be compassionate on the people speaking foreign languages, let's go ahead and talk about that. They could be unfairly accused of wrongdoing just because they don't understand what the police officer is telling them. And on top of all of that, think about this. They're only going to get a minimum wage job. If you cannot speak English, you are relegated to the bottom rung of the ladder. Now, do you really want to keep everybody at the bottom rung? Because you will not advance in this culture if you can't motivate yourself to move up. So,
and I think that is intentionally what some of these people are trying to do. It's the cheap labor, and, you know, for one side, and it's the votes for the other side, and as long as we keep them needy and with their hand out and uneducated, then both sides are accomplishing what they want. And it's insanity to me. It's treason, actually. You know, you know, the whole issue of illegal immigration being illegal. Illegal immigration is illegal. And for us not to enforce our laws because the Chamber of Commerce wants this, or some, you know, dare I say it, religious group wants a head count, or the farmer wants to increase his profit line and thinks that for some reason, because he wants to increase the farmer's profit line, he can go ahead and break the law. All of these things, this is what's adding to the lawlessness and chaos that we are experiencing.
Well, let me tell you about my sister, because she and her husband were missionaries and they moved to France. Now, they knew when they got to France that they were not going to change the French culture to accommodate these Americans. And that's a good thing, because a lot of people in France actually can speak English, but they won't let you know that because they don't let you know if they speak English. They want to make you speak French. And so she put her children in the public school there where the kids didn't know a lick of French, but they were submerged into the culture. Within 6 weeks, it made us gasp. I mean, what? You're putting your kids in a French-speaking school and they don't know how are you going to communicate? Within 6 weeks, those kids were speaking French. And all of them learned French fluently. They did well. The school didn't bend over backwards and try and speak English for them. No, that's not how it works. But that's just the way life works. So I believe we need to send a message when people come here that we're Americans, we love you, we'll do what we can to accommodate you. But come on, this is our country. Let's be proud. Let's all stand together. We'll appreciate everybody's differences. You can keep your culture. We all want you to respect you in your culture. But let's live by the rules and do the right thing, and we will all have a better culture for it.
Well, and they are supposed to have a basic understanding of the English language before they come here legally. That's another problem. And as for the cultural aspects, you know, seriously, if somebody wants to sit at home and make, you know, I don't know, German potato salad. Let's just use that because, of course, if I say tacos, I'm going to get, you know, beat up for it. But, you know, what you do at your home, as long as it doesn't break the law and it's in your home, that's fine. But the cultural differences that these people are expecting, if it's a hardship or it changes the culture of the United States of America, then why, you know, I don't know how I'm trying to say this. If their cultural aspects, for example, let's put it this way, thinking that it's all right to beat your wife because she is on the lower ladder than your mule or your dog is a cultural difference that should not be, accepted in the United States. It should not be accepted in their home. So in that case, if they cannot go by the rule of law, and the cultural aspects that are expected of them in the United States and not beat their wives whenever they feel like it, then, frankly, they probably picked the wrong country to migrate to.
They did. And there's something called the squatter's law, which was meant years ago. If somebody comes on your property and essentially squats on your property for so long, then that land becomes his. And this is what's been going on very gradually, is we've been allowing people to dictate what the laws should be by just encroaching on our way of life, and it's not serving us well. So you've got elected officials who are feeling like they're going to acquiesce to whatever is going on now instead of just being principled about it. And there's nothing other than the rule of law that we have to rely on. That's why it is such a disappointment when our federal government does not stand to uphold and protect our Constitution. Even if they don't agree with it, they have an obligation to protect it and defend it and abide by it. And this is what should concern all of us, because one person says one part of the Constitution doesn't matter anymore. Well, then, what part are you going to throw out next?
Yep, exactly. Yep. So if I seeing that you've been involved politically, and you have, you really do have an extensive bio. And I'm not asking presidential candidate. I do not even want to go there, but I am asking your thoughts on where and how the illegal immigration debate in this country is going to play out.
Well,
do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I do. It's a problem, granted, right now, because nobody's willing to be brave enough to address it. But you know what? We could fix the problem in a day. If we could get people who would stand up for what's right and protect our borders and our national security, we could, you know, we're going to, fortunately, there's an election coming in November. If the people work to help get things corrected by maybe getting people in office who can correct it, they could have the mess corrected by January. It's that close. We're less than a year away from seeing a new day dawn in America, where we continue to push for what's right and proper and what make ourselves law-abiding again by what we already agreed to. This is about
national. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to – we're both going to the same place. That's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say the same word. Yeah,
yep.
National sovereignty and how we are – see, nations do matter. And this is the point. A lot of people thought, well, what does it matter if Barack Obama's father is a Kenyan citizen? And you know what? It does matter because nations matter and your attachments matter. And we do care about doing the right thing and protecting us. And if the government, the national government, did nothing else but just protect us, that is what we expect out of our national government. And you know, a lot of us are frustrated because we look at the current office holders and ask, why aren't they doing the right thing? Maybe if I write letters and do phone calls and communicate, send email and text and Twitter all of them, it will make a difference. Well, you know what? Save your breath. Because if they haven't figured it out by now, we need some new people there who will figure it out. Because actions speak louder than words. Don't let any elected official in any state tell you that I'll do the right thing, and then he gets in office and totally forgets what he promised you and doesn't care. It is way easier to change the elected official than it is to educate and re-educate and try and coax and convince somebody who already has chosen not to become informed.
Yeah, see, and I was just saying that, and I don't know if you listened in before, but, you know, I just said the same thing. You know, those that do not stand up for the rule of law and hold, you know, and honor the oath that they are taking to represent the citizens of the United States of America and legal residents over those who are breaking our laws must be voted out or removed from office. It's just that simple. If we are ever going to get a hold of this.
And it happens on every level of government, we have a chance. I learned this lesson 17 years ago when I was going to, before I even got elected, actually, we were having our O'Fallon Business Association meeting, and somebody said, where's the mayor? Why doesn't the mayor ever care about what we're doing? And the answer was, he will care 6 months before the election. He'll be back and show up and act like he's interested. Well, my message is this. Let's prove to them that the voters are not ignorant, that we know what we're doing, and we're serious. We mean business. When we say we want you to uphold our laws, we mean it, or we go get somebody who will uphold our laws.
Yep. You know, and you know, again, too, you brought up the sovereignty, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, the issue of illegal immigration is not only, you know, what they want it to be. They want it to be, oh, this, the poor plight of the poor Mexican, or the poor plight of this person or that person. And for some reason, our security, our safety, and our sovereignty is taking a back seat to this pandering. I cannot for the life of me understand why congressmen and women, and I don't care which party they're from, cannot see the dangers that are happening with our open border, Hezbollah on the border. God only knows who's coming in through that border. You know, we found Korans and all this stuff on the border. That silence by those elected to office to address, just address our security, sovereignty, and safety, the silence is just deafening, isn't it?
Well, my favorite picture of the year was the one of Jan Brewer with her finger pointing at Obama on the runway, because you know what? It tells the entire story, and every state needs a Jan Brewer. We need good people to stand up against the national government if they're wrong and point out you're wrong. The idea that a man occupying the White House could have the gall to sue a state over a state passage of a law that merely upholds the Constitution is absolutely absurd. And it's time for the game playing to stop. And so we need more. Can you imagine what would happen if every state had a Jan Brewer in it?
Oh, wouldn't it be awesome? I've tried. I actually did run for lieutenant governor myself, but I wasn't going to tell you that. I don't know if Donna's already told you that, but I have tried. It just seems to be very hard to beat the political machine here. I haven't given up. They just haven't figured it out yet. But states' rights, that's another thing I wanted to bring up with you. In the Constitution, the states' rights says, Article 1, 10 says that if they are being invaded, the states have the right to address that. Now, do you not believe, as a constitutional candidate from the Constitution Party, that that right there in itself gives Jan Brewer the legal right to protect her citizens of her states?
Absolutely. You know, we have to all look at what we can do. And frankly, we're being betrayed by the national government. This is an outright betrayal. And as they said in the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, hey, when things turn sour, sometimes you just have to dissolve the relationship. I mean, we are being treated, we as states are being treated with what I call it the battered wife syndrome. So the national government takes advantage of us and does something that's harmful and hurtful. There's a point where we're going to have to stand up and pivot on our heel and say, that's enough, no further. We have been letting them be a big bully to all of the states. And, you know,
yep.
A lot of states let it happen because they were hoping they'd get money out of it. And, you know, that's no better than the choice to become a prostitute. When you see the states out there saying, give us money, and in turn we'll let you have whatever you want, then we have just defied the people that we represent. And I'm sorry about your lieutenant governor bid, but Missouri is different. We are the show-me state, and we are about to show them. We're going to
I wish
election.
You... Oh, my luck. I really do. Now, I want to just tell everybody real quick, in the Constitution, that the state rights is Article 1, Section 10. Now, do you, and I should have asked this a long time ago, I support states' rights. I support Governor Brewer. I think that Governor Brewer must do whatever she can in her power, which the Constitution I just read to you allows her to do. However, do you see a danger in states having to take that step? I mean, having to go that far that it would be a detriment at the country?
Well, she's doing what she can to hold things together, but here's the point with going back to the squatter's law. Because we never pushed back before, we've been losing our rights. I also was the sponsor of the Light Bulb Freedom Act, which says light bulbs made in Missouri and used in Missouri are not subject to federal jurisdiction, and they cannot tell us what kind of light bulbs we can buy and use. And we have a lake in Missouri, Lake of the Ozarks, and we've got the same problem. It's a privately owned lake, And we've got the feds coming in here and trying to dictate how we can make the shoreline look uninhabited. And it's time for us to push back and say, look, you've gone too far. This is our state. Please leave. You're not invited, and we'll call you when we need your help.
I have about 45 seconds, so I have one quick question, and then I would like you to go ahead and give your website and information again, please. Will you come back closer to the election?
I would love to. You know, Donna's a night owl. I wasn't sure if she – or no, she's not. She's an early bird. I know that there's some people who are going to be asleep by the time we get done with this. So my mission is to wake us up, wake up the state, wake up the voters, tell them we have hope. And, yeah, I'd be thrilled. And my website is votecynthia.com. And you can go to votecynthia.com and sign up for things and see things and watch videos and have all kinds of fun. Thank you for letting me be on your show.
Oh, you have an open invitation, and thank you for being my guest.
Great. We'll see you next time.
All righty. Thank you for tuning in. Next week, our guest will be Dave Gibson. Please have a safe week. See you next week.